all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation. Unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Wisconsin Sense. It's Friday, January 20th, 2023. It's another beautiful day on Lake Wissota. Got most of the snow moved out of the way. Looks to be about 5 inches or so that we got here. Some folks got quite a bit more in the far northern parts of the state. Hope you all got it cleared and are moving along your way safely today. Coming up this morning, let's see, at 6:30, we're going to talk about how a small minority of congressional Republicans, who themselves represent a minority of American voters, want to play a game of chicken with the national economy. I mean, remember, we have just climbed out of a COVID recession, and we've climbed out of it quite nicely. Unemployment is at a 50-year low. Things are on the right track. Inflation's coming down. And yet, this small block of right-wing politicians is preparing to steer the country into default, and that is something that will affect you. It will affect every American through higher interest rates and prices if they get away with it. Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kiev Akil talks about the folly of refusing to pay for debts that Congress has already incurred. We're not even talking about new spending, but spending you already authorized, but now are refusing to pay for. Then at 7:15, we'll be joined by State Assembly Representative Lisa Subek to explain how the state Republican flat tax plan is nothing more than a massive tax cut for the super wealthy, paid for on the backs of the middle class and low-income families. And we will also look ahead to next Tuesday's State of the State address by Governor Tony Evers. At 6:50, we will meet with Courier Newsroom political editorial director Carolyn Fidler, ostensibly to talk about the week's political headlines, but since it's also at the same time that we do this day in music history, we'll probably go off on another tangent as we usually do. Our regular Friday 7:30 guest, Mark Jacob, is out today. He will be back next Friday. And so Dan Schumacher, who normally joins us Fridays at 7:50, is going to join us a little earlier at 7:30 for the full half hour. He's not just a Grateful Dead fan. He's not just the UW-Eau Claire athletic director who gets to play celebrity guest sportscaster with us on Friday mornings, but a very big fan of David Crosby, who passed away, a true legend in rock history, folk rock, you name it. He had a front row seat to basically everything at the beginning, and not just watching it, participating in it, writing, performing. And we'll talk quite a bit about that. We're going to play music from him, either written by him or performed by him, with Crosby, Stills, Nash, Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, The Birds, and so much more, all to come today. So that's what's all ahead. Along with your phone calls, if you'd like to reach us, you can call 844-967-2789, at which point Aaron Zommers will get on the line, say hello, and get you all routed. Aaron, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing pretty well, more awake than I have been at this time. I'm starting to readjust to being awake this early. How about yourself?
You had to readjust to it. That's right, because we had a little time off. Yeah, I could see where that would be an adjustment for you. You know, I can't put it any other way. As a now older person, being up early is just kind of my default status. So, you know, every so often, Kroot will check in with me and say, you know, how are things going with that early hour? I'm like, I'm good with it. It's fine. I mean, my wife leaves for work by 6 a.m. and we're just the early birds. The only thing missing are some cows to milk. And since Sherry used to milk 72 of them every morning before getting on the school bus, I don't think she really needs to have that. So we're good with the early morning, but I totally understand folks of your age not being adjusted. But hopefully you didn't have to do as much to the car as you did yesterday when you had to get, what, you know, a couple, 3 inches of snow off it.
Oh, no, definitely not. Today, I went outside and looked at my car, and I'm like, what? It's totally clear. How is this legal at this time of year?
It's so true. Before I forget, because I almost forgot in the 6 o'clock hour yesterday, so I'm going to make mention of it right now, that the Civic Media network of radio stations is growing to the point where the stations are doing something very big to celebrate, giving away $1 million in advertising to various small businesses all across Wisconsin. Here's how it works. Next week, Thursday, January 26th at 9 a.m., you, on behalf of your small business, can fill out an application for a piece of the giveaway and for your chance to work with the team here to create a radio advertising campaign promoting your business across our statewide network, where applicable, for free. So go to civicmedia.us/million for all the rules, and look for more information on the Civic Media Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram pages as well. All right, let's take a break, take a look at headlines and such right after this break. You're up north. Wait a minute. What time is it?
Just about 6:12, so we still have a minute.
Didn't I just get done saying that I adapt to the early morning hours better than you? Didn't I just get done saying how wide awake I am at this point?
Yeah. We all make mistakes in the heat of passion.
Oh, boy. Well, at this point, I think with the 20 seconds now that I have left before I really should take a commercial break, I should probably just sign off and tell folks I'm going to go back to bed and, get me up around 11 or so. I'm going to have crute like hours for the rest of the day. No, I really will stick around this time and give you a little extra jingle music to listen to right now on Up North News Radio. So as I mentioned, we'll get more into the life of David Crosby, who passed away at the age of 81 as a singer, songwriter. He helped define what you would call the Woodstock generation by being part of the Byrds and then Crosby, Stills, Nash, Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young. A former publicist cited family members in confirming his death with not a lot of details immediately available, but Crosby had a history of hepatitis, diabetes, heart ailments, and other problems over the years. Obviously, he's best known for being teamed up with Stephen Stills and Graham Nash, sometimes with Neil Young. It was actually Nash who wrote that tune, Marrakesh Express, released in July of 1969, during Nash's final years as a member of the Hollies. He had been a part of that from 1962 to 68. The Hollies rejected the song as not commercial enough, but it definitely found a home with CSN once they got going. And, Nash said it really was the story of a train journey that he took from Casablanca to Marrakesh back in 1966. But, as a member of the Byrds, Crosby sold millions of albums just with them. As the Washington Post writes, an era of peace, love, and political engagement with songs like Mr. Tambourine Man, Turn, 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 8 Miles High. Then with Stills and Nash, he did Marrakesh Express, Carry On, Our House, Teach Your Children, and so much more. So we'll hear David Crosby-related music throughout the morning here on Up North News Radio. A little later today, the U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services, Xavier Becerra, will be in Wisconsin. He'll be in the Milwaukee area to talk about the ongoing fight, for lack of a better term, because that's what it is, for restoring women's health care rights, specifically their abortion care rights, which should be left between them, their doctors, their family, their faith, and not politicians. Secretary Becerra started with a visit to Minnesota to affirm the Biden administration's commitment to abortion rights. Becerra went to a Planned Parenthood clinic in St. Paul, appeared with Democratic Governor Tim Walz and other Democratic legislative leaders, and then the Minnesota House of Representatives fast-tracked a bill to codify abortion rights into Minnesota state statutes by a vote of 69 to 65. Becerra said, you in Minnesota, you're going to make history at a time when it seems like regression seems to be more on the table than anything else. He said, it's a good day to be in Minnesota. Now, again, he will be in Cudahy, one of the Milwaukee suburbs, today at a clinic that lost the ability to provide abortions when a statewide ban from 1849, written by a bunch of old white guys, kicked back into law. It had gone off the books in the nearly 50 years that Roe v. Wade protected a woman and her individual health care decisions. When Roe v. Wade was struck down this past June by the U.S. Supreme Court, by the right-wing justices on it, in what's known as the Dobbs decision, that 1849 law kicked back in. And Governor Tony Evers, among others, said, why don't we let the people decide, or let's give the legislature a chance to modify this, because the ban is archaic, it is confusing, it is dangerous to women and their doctors. The legislature said no. And so Secretary Becerra will be in Cudahy today. Our friend Dr. Kristen Lyerly will be part of a roundtable discussion in Milwaukee today on reproductive health. It will include Senator Tammy Baldwin as well, to again make the point that this is something politicians need not be involved in and should not be dragging the country back. You know, as people have made the point that basically officially Catholic Ireland gives women better rights than the state of Wisconsin and many other parts of the United States. And all of this is ahead of Sunday's 50th anniversary of the Roe v. Wade decision. So again, what would have marked 50 years of women's rights being protected will instead make clear that this is something that will be on the ballot all the time, every time, until these rights are restored. And they will be restored at some point. You cannot keep women as second-class citizens forever. Well, so what is the Wisconsin legislature working on instead? Well, the assembly had its first floor session, and yesterday helped to give a final push to a proposed constitutional amendment that would make it harder for violent criminals to get out on bail. That measure will go before voters to be ratified on April 4th. It is a push by Republican lawmakers to speed the amendment before voters. And basically, I don't know how else to say this, make them look two-faced on the issue, because it was Republicans who were just absolutely crucifying Mandela Barnes last year for talking about, you know, Mandela's position on cash bail, which is absolutely in line with what proposals like this and others are doing, that bail should be a factor of your danger to the community, not whether or not you have cash to make bail.
That's absolutely, like, that just makes sense. And then during that last election, they advertised it as the exact opposite. Like, Mandela Barnes wants to get rid of cash bail. That means he gets rid of bail and gets rid of the prison system, and he just puts criminals directly into your house.
Yeah, it is. It's just absolutely, like I said, two-faced. And then they went ahead, the assembly did, and voted along party lines to pass an advisory referendum for the April ballot. We've talked about this before, the non-binding measure to ask if voters believe able-bodied childless welfare recipients should be required to look for work, something that is already state law. It's already state law. This is the kind of thing that a state Supreme Court, if it was doing its job, would say, no, get that off the ballot. Stop wasting our time. Stop wasting the voters' time. Republicans have also passed work search requirements to receive other welfare benefits, but COVID-19 pandemic restrictions from the Biden administration have put those laws on hold. But unemployment benefits are already required to look for jobs, and they do. And they're getting them. Again, unemployment is at a 50-year low. The economy is humming along nicely. But because of that, there isn't a lot of public support for tax cuts for the wealthy, which is really the only one, that's the one page of the Republicans' economic plan. The Republican economic plan is one page long, and it just says cut taxes for the very rich, which makes no sense at any given time, and certainly not now as the economy is humming along. So what do? You either distract by putting up welfare-related referenda questions, which, again, have no impact because it's already state law, you know, or through, you know, a gerrymandered legislature, you try to force through a flat tax plan, which does cut taxes for the very wealthy, knowing full well that won't go through because, newsflash, Tony Evers won the election again. And so you've got to negotiate with him. You've got to get over, you know, the threat of a veto. So with every moment that Republicans aren't taking economic measures seriously, they're wasting your time and they're wasting your money. At the state level, every day talking about a flat tax that is not going to pass, waste your time. And at the national level, debt ceiling debate is wasting time. And frankly, is going to threaten to do a lot of damage to the economy, as we're going to hear in our next segment from Kia Vakil. But again, we would just love to see anything else, anything that is forward-looking. And this week, one thing I haven't heard talked about at all by the legislature, that $6.6 billion surplus that they have been sitting on for a year. There's still something that can be done there. Actually, there's a lot of things that can be done there with $6 billion. You can create a lot of win-win with that. You can fold it into the budget that has to be passed before June 30th, or you can do something separate with it and entirely beneficial. And yet, I'm not seeing any indication that something like that is going to happen. And instead, again, we're seeing things that are meant to divide us. And of course, not just Wisconsin. Let's go down to Florida, where Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has done something that is so creepy and ugly. I don't know how you can't justify using the words white supremacist before his name from now on, where you would say white supremacist Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has rejected a request to approve a high school African-American studies course in Florida on the grounds that it violates state law. What state law would that violate? Well, it's one that DeSantis supports, the so-called Stop Woke Act, because they don't want to promote critical race theory. Again, critical race theory is a law school theory that is taught in law school, not K through 12. But when Republicans say, stop teaching wokeness and critical race theory, what they're actually saying is stop teaching an honest view of our past history and stop teaching about the values of diversity and openness. But DeSantis, through his Department of Education, in rejecting this AP course in African American Studies, says that the course is contrary to Florida law and, quote, significantly lacks educational value. Yes, I will say that again. It significantly lacks educational value. An advanced placement course for African American studies, in the view of Ron DeSantis, does not have educational value. This is part of what DeSantis is doing to become the Republican presidential candidate in 2024. His attack on wokeness, which, as you'll hear me say repeatedly, and I'll say again with apologies for the language, woke simply means don't be a bigoted ass. But if you can score political points being, you know, that jackbox, well, then that's what you're going to do. And that's what Ron DeSantis has been doing as part of an effort to basically ban conversations about race in classrooms. I can never stop the conversations they're having with each other, but I stick to the Florida state standards for African American history and other social studies standards that are integrated within the course. And that's just the route we go. In other words, just teach to the letter of what's in the textbook. And the textbook itself, as controlled by DeSantis and others, is not going to tell the full history. of not just slavery in America, but its lasting legacy, that to this day, Black Americans are not able to fully participate because of the systemic shortcomings that are given to them in education, in healthcare, in the criminal justice system and such. But if white supremacist Ron DeSantis wants to do that in Florida, go ahead, because we're going to talk about it and make sure people know exactly what he is. Back with Kia Vakil after this. You're up north.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
Before we get into our interview that we taped with Kia Vakil, Courier Newsroom national correspondent in LA, because again, we're not going to call him at 4:30 in the morning to pick his brain. But before we get to that, we're going to talk a bit about the debt ceiling and how the U.S. has reached it and how Republicans don't want to pass a clean increase in it the way that they did for Trump and other Republican presidents. They want to negotiate massive cuts while also at the same time not telling you what those cuts would be. So there is not going to be a negotiation with Speaker McCarthy. And yet, one of my favorite Wisconsin commenters on Twitter, Nick Fleischer, an associate professor at UWM, speaks for me when talking about the frustration with news media, such as National Public Radio, that finished a story on the debt ceiling yesterday with, quote, "For now, McCarthy is the only leader at the negotiating table." And Nick writes, "I almost drove off the road." I couldn't agree more. No, McCarthy's not the only leader at the negotiating table, because you don't negotiate the debt ceiling. And so to make him look like the reasonable one is just another case of the news media just so frustratingly getting it wrong. Here's more of my conversation with Kia Vakil. Kia Vakil joins us now from LA. Kia, good to see you again.
Thank you for having me. Good to be on.
Well, let's start with the debt ceiling debate, because as we record this interview, I don't expect that much is going to change with it. In fact, I get the sense we're going to be in limbo for quite some time on this, as far as whether there has to be budget cuts, whether the country will go into default as it did, you know, a decade ago briefly, you know, and then all the pushback on is something an entitlement versus an earned benefit. And I'm not looking to make everybody's head spin or confuse them, but What I think I am trying to say is that, yes, this is a serious issue, but we probably won't see motion on it right away.
Yes, that's exactly right. It's something, you know, that's probably going to play out over the course of months, and really in, you know, May and June, most likely, is when it's going to come to a head. And so basically, just to give a little bit more context, the debt ceiling is this arbitrary number that Congress sets that determines how much the country can borrow in debt to cover its costs and spending. It has been extended. The debt ceiling has been raised for decades over and over again. It's never really been a huge issue until the last 10 years or so, when Republicans, you know, have decided to play football with the global economy. And that's because if you don't raise the debt ceiling, it could lead the U.S. to default on its debt, which, being the global economic powerhouse, would have a ripple effect all over the world. People would lose their jobs. Loans would become impossible to secure in some place. It would just be an absolute disaster. And Republicans are signaling in the House that they are pretty prepared to push us to the brink of that. Because they want to cut Social Security, they want to cut Medicare, they want to cut Medicaid, they want to cut funding to go after tax cheats. So
we know all that, but you know what makes it so frustrating, and what I was hearing from Jared Bernstein, the president, one of the president's economic advisors, is what would help with all this is if the Republicans had a plan. There isn't a plan. There's just, we're going to go into this room after taking the economy hostage and saying, we demand cuts. Well, it sounds like it would be a lot easier if the Republicans would be more clear on, go ahead and give us a dollar amount. How much do you want to cut Social Security? How much do you want to cut Medicare and all of that? And that appears to be lacking still in terms of turning this into a good faith debate.
Yeah, and that's because it isn't a good faith debate. They know they're in a sort of an impossible situation because they know the moment they say we want to cut Social Security by, I don't know, $100 billion, that's going to appear in ads for the next 2 years. The moment they say we want to cut healthcare and raise your premiums by $100 a month, that's going to appear. We want to cut defense spending, that's going to be all over ads. The moment they specify, you know, and you see what, even now when they talk about Social Security and Medicare, they use code words, they use entitlements, they use, you know, spending. They're not willing to outright say it in most cases because they're smart enough to know that it's toxic. But, you know, if they're not willing to name it, then you're right, they have no plan, which just means they're going to push us to the brink of an economic disaster and do what exactly? They're going to make the cuts that their voters are going to hate. They're going to not make the cuts, but blow up the economy. It's not a serious political party. You know, John Boehner, the former Speaker of the House, he's just called them legislative terrorists, and that's what they are. And they're about to be economic terrorists and take a lot of people's livelihoods away if they actually do this.
And the funny thing is, I mean, their very first action after taking over the House was to pass something calling on basically defunding the IRS, or at least taking away the extra funds that were coming from the Inflation Reduction Act, which, as I read, would add $115 billion to the deficit. So again, they're not really coming at this from, let's say, the most solid position of being a fiscal hawk.
No, not at all. They pretend to be fiscally responsible when it suits them, when Democrats are in charge. Then they, you know, raise taxes or they cut taxes for billionaires and wealthy when Republicans are in charge. You know, the deficit went up under Bush and Trump and has declined under Biden. And it's, they don't care. It's nonsense. They're completely full of it. And, you know, their whole agenda here is basically they have the section of the caucus that just opposes taxes in general, wants to undo the entire 20th century, basically. Mm-hmm. And then there's the, you know, the January 6th caucus, which is a bunch of MAGA crazies who just want to make government stop working. And so these two sides are kind of working together at this because both of those things will get done if they, you know, breach the debt ceiling.
So when people say, what, you know, what does this mean to me? Let's look at one thing in particular, not just, you know, Social Security checks or jobs that could be eliminated or higher interest rates. Let's take rural hospitals, for example, because, again, the way populations have been shifting, it is getting harder and harder to find healthcare options in rural America to attract new doctors to come practice there and then to retain them. That's something that I'm sure members of Congress with rural districts say they don't want to cut. They always talk about we want to cut, you know, things in the big bad cities. But you've been working on just, you know, the amount of rural hospital closures illustrates the need to not play chicken with the budget.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, rural communities have been in population decline. There's been a brain drain, you know, and hospitals are closing over the past, you know, 15 to 20 years, hundreds across the country. And one of the few lifelines that these hospitals, these communities have is Medicaid, because Medicaid covers low-income adults, people with disabilities, some seniors, some children. And Medicaid is a huge source of payment for these hospitals to keep them alive. And, you know, Republicans have this, they're putting together apparently this payment prioritization plan if the U.S. breaches the debt ceiling, which would effectively call on the government to prioritize things like, you know, Social Security and Medicare, but not Medicaid. So in this, if this were to happen, which is, you know, whether or not it's not likely necessarily, because there's no chance in hell Democrats will agree to this. But, you know, in this world, if Republicans get their way, Social Security checks will go out, but Medicaid payments will not, which means people who are on Medicaid will not be able to get the care they need because their care isn't being covered by the program that's supposed to cover it. And that means those hospitals are going to lose money. That might mean they shut down. That might mean a whole other bunch of people who don't get who aren't on Medicaid can't get care. So it's a huge ripple effect. And that's just one out of dozens.
Mm-hmm. And then I would add parenthetically and completely from an editorial standpoint, instead of spending cuts, you could talk about, you know, the tax rates that billionaires are paying instead and look at the revenue side of all this. But, you know, heaven forbid that happened over in the House of Representatives. One more item budget-wise, and then we'll move on. But the child tax credit was greatly expanded during the pandemic. One of many forms of pandemic relief that, you know, kept the economy alive, quite frankly. And it, like other things, that expanded benefit has gone away, which it doesn't make sense because it has so demonstrably been proven to reduce childhood poverty. And who'd be against that? Would.
Apparently 50 Republicans and Joe Manchin were against it. And you know, it's bizarre. Let's put it that way. I'll keep it PG, but because you have, like you said, there were study after study after study showing it decreased child poverty. New studies showing it had an enormous impact on mental health of parents, especially low-income parents and parents who are Black or Latino or Indigenous. It turns out when you give working-class people who live paycheck to paycheck money, it makes them less stressed, it makes them happier, it makes the food they get their kids healthier. It's a huge life-changing policy. And you have these rich Congress people and senators who, you know, haven't lived in reality for decades, you know, preventing them from getting that again. And that's, you know, pretty telling.
Here's something else from the real world that you've been working on that people have to deal with and shouldn't have to the degree that they are. And that's something called a non-compete clause in employment. Now, I think any of us can come up with examples where a non-compete clause would be a very good thing, especially if it's written, you know, narrowly to prevent, frankly, outright theft of trade secrets and things like that. But non-compete agreements they're not so much agreements; they're demands before somebody will hire you. And the FTC is, I guess, finally getting involved and trying to rein some of that in on behalf of workers.
Exactly. So, you know, let's say. There's millions of Americans who are under these, you know, non-compete clauses. And basically what that means is, let's say you're a hairdresser. You sign a contract to work at, you know, Jimmy's barbershop down the street from where you live. And Jimmy says that to work here, you have to agree to sign a non-compete, which means if you leave for X months or years, you cannot, you know, work at another barbershop within, you know, in the same city, or you cannot, you know, set up your own barbershop. And the goal is, you know, in general, it's to prevent people from taking ideas or taking clients, what have you. But in reality, you know, it winds up being abused by companies who are able to use non-competes to take away workers' rights and basically limit their bargaining ability and limit their ability to move on from jobs and their ability to negotiate better pay. So, you know, it's really been abused. And so, like you said, the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, I believe it was 2 or 3 weeks ago now, issued a proposed rule that would ban these clauses and basically retroactively undo any that are in existence. And that has to go through a whole process. It's going to be face some lawsuits. The Chamber of Commerce is against it. Surprise, surprise. So, but you know, if it were to be finalized, it would give workers, it would be life-changing for millions of people.
So we kind of end as we began in that this too is a very important issue to many folks, but nothing's going to happen fast on it. But it's still worth talking about because once again, it illustrates, folks, you can decide for yourself who on this issue is on your side and who is not. Courier Newsroom National Correspondent Kia Vakil joining us from Los Angeles. Again, Kia, always great to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Likewise. Thank you, Pat.
Always good to hear from him, and we'll check in with him on a regular basis to see what he's covering for Courier Newsroom on our behalf at Up North News, which you can find over at upnorthnewswi.com or search for Up North News WI on any of your favorite social media sites. That's how you find Up North News. how about this little show and all your other favorite shows on Civic Media? Well, you might be listening on Bull Falls Radio in Wausau or any of the other great stations around the state, because we're on the entire Civic Media radio network for the 6 a.m. hour. But if you're away from the radio, just watch us on our Facebook page. Go to Up North News or the Facebook page for Bull Falls Radio. But the best way to go about it is civicmedia.us. Click on a station or click on a show, and you'll see all of our past episodes and how to subscribe to them as a podcast. Each hour is its own separate podcast that you can listen to at your convenience. Carolyn Fiddler and This Day in Music next. What do you think, Carolyn Fiddler? Should we just do karaoke versions of this for the rest of the segment?
You know what? I'm good. I've never been the biggest Jimmy Buffett fan, so.
Well, those of us who are, you know, are celebrating that on this day in 1997, Jimmy released his seventh studio album. There's the title track from Changes in Latitude, Changes in Attitude. Also featured Margaritaville. Did I say 1997? 1977.
I was about to say, I'm pretty sure that song's been around longer.
Yeah. Margaritaville peaked at number 8, Buffett's highest entry on the Billboard Hot 100. We have been talking a lot about David Crosby. Crosby, Stills, Nash. We'll get back to that throughout the rest of the program here. But before we get into the rest of history and music history, Courier Newsroom political editorial director Carolyn Fiddler joins us as often on Fridays. How are you?
I'm good. And this is Nebula for anyone watching.
Nebula, if you're watching on the video screen, the video feed from Carolyn Fiddler has been hijacked by a small furry animal. And like most cats could not care less, you know, whether they're interrupting something or not.
She wants to meet all your listeners. She
loves, there you she go. Loves people. So we just finished playing back our interview with Kia Vakil. We obviously talked a lot about the debt ceiling fight that seems to be consuming so much of the oxygen in Washington, D.C. these days. And yet things probably won't. Not a lot is likely to happen for weeks or months. So they can't keep talking about that every day. Where do they put their focus next to attempt to earn a paycheck?
Oh, Republicans? Who knows? Probably Biden investigations. They're trying to make hay out of the document thing, which is, you know, not a thing. You know, these things were mislaid. They've been returned. It's, you know, there's no there. But
what do you make of the story that Democrats are almost giddy that the Oversight Committee has been stacked and is essentially a rogues gallery or a clown show, that you've got everyone, Gosar and Boebert and Marjorie Taylor Greene, they're all on oversight. It's almost like Speaker McCarthy needed their votes to become speaker, but by putting them all on this committee to do investigations, he knows they're not going to be taken seriously.
That's exactly right. that's perfect, because yes, that's exactly the situation. Like no one can take them seriously. They won't allow it functionally because of who they are.
Right. Now, unfortunately, what it also means is they will be the stars or the center ring of the circus, if you will, in right-wing media. I mean, anything they do is going to be nonstop coverage, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. It's like the Fox News vacation of Congress. Hannity's already been to the U.S. House to film a show, and he's going to keep coming back. And it's really weird and wrong. But
I think any effort to bring Americans together on a single set of facts and information, I think it's going to get a lot tougher if it wasn't already impossible already. Hey, it was on this day 70 years ago that 72% of all TV sets in the country on this day in 1953 were watching I Love Lucy to watch the episode where Lucy gives birth, something unheard of, you know, in TV at the time. Isn't that just one of the great examples of how far we have come, that, you know, it used to be the married couples had to sleep in separate beds with a nightstand between them, and you know, they didn't want to show a pregnant lady. I can't I don't even know what the equivalent would be in TV today. It just tells you how far we've come.
Yeah, no idea.
I don't think can ever be an equivalent. I don't think there can ever be an equivalent to that on today's TV, just because of how much it's changed and how much stuff is out there.
I think so. I think what you do now is you see how much more you can, you know, shock somebody with, you know, things that we normally wouldn't want to see on TV. Another thing that did put people around TVs was every landing on the moon. And it was on this day in 1930 that Buzz Aldrin was born. He is 93 years old today. Wow. Second man on the moon, oldest of the four living moonwalkers. Birthdays include Paul Stanley from Kiss is 71 years old today. Let's see. Let's go to Aaron's going to play some Bebop Baby from Ricky Nelson. Ricky Nelson, Mina, again, we're going back to 50s TV, the Ozzie and Harriet and their little boy, Ricky Nelson, who then became a pop idol at the time. I guess. Well, no, not a boy band, but I don't know. Apparently, again, we don't. I know. Justin Bieber. That's who I'm trying to think of. Oh, Ricky Nelson was the Justin Bieber of the late 1950s. How's that?
OK, I think I'm a little too old for Justin Bieber. Actually.
Oh, my goodness. OK, let's go to something more fun then. And we'll hear the Beatles playing I Saw Her Standing There, because it was on this day in 1964 that the Beatles released their first American album, Meet the Beatles. We talked about I Want to Hold Your Hand earlier in the week, but I Saw Her Standing There. It was another one of their big hits. Let's listen in the background to Tangled Up in Blue, as Bob Dylan, on this day in 1975, released Blood on the Tracks, and Tangled Up in Blue was the big single from that. It's one of the few, I think there's only two, maybe three Bob Dylan songs that, you know, I'll listen to all the way through, but not more than that, I'm pretty sure.
I'm kind of on the same page, for what it's worth.
Yeah.
I mean, with the exception of things that he's written that other people have sung.
All right. Well, let's see. What are we up to here? Oh, okay. Now we're into Carolyn Fiddler territory. Uh-oh. 1983 from Def Leppard releasing their third album.
Oh, wow.
All right. All right. Where were you where were you on the dance floor when this was coming out?
Nowhere. I was a tiny, tiny baby.
It was 1983. Okay. See, this is where I talk about being on the dance floor at Shenanigans on Water Street in Eau Claire, or oh, wow. Trader and Trapper, and you know the home of Three for One. Yeah, there was a lot of dancing to Def Leppard. We got to get closer to Carolyn's age here. Okay, here we go.
It's okay.
1998, the Backstreet Boys gained a competitor when a bunch of young punks called NSYNC came along with this one. Okay, have we put Carolyn on a dance floor yet? No. Did even have dance floors in bars when you were going to college?
Even in Arkansas, yes.
Okay. All right. Good. Just wanted to check here. obviously, the anniversary, you know, January 20th is the anniversary of a ton of presidential inaugurations. John F. Kennedy, Barack Obama, Joe Biden, so many others. Kamala Harris becoming the first female vice president. And then we'll close with Meatloaf's I'd Do Anything for Love.
Oh, gosh.
Because he passed away a year ago at the age of 74. As he plays in the background, we thank Carolyn Fiddler, as she does every week, to make me feel so extremely old, but also fill me in on what to look for political headlines in the new week. I hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Always appreciate a little ray of sunshine now and then, rather than just having to hear me dribble on for an hour. In fact, to help me interrupt my dribbling in the next hour, State Representative Lisa Subek previews the State of the State. You're up north.